Welcome back to The Broad Perspective. I'm your host, Megan Cruz, and we have a fantastic guest that I am so excited to talk to today, Miss Emma Caulfield Ford, incredible actress extraordinaire.
Ugh, stop. Stop. Truly.
You know I'm a huge fan of your work, and I'm so thrilled to have you here.
Thank you.
I know it's holiday season. How's everything been going for you? Busy? Stressful?
Both. Yeah. Both of those things.
Yeah. Isn't it always?
Yeah. It's been one of those years. Again, it seems we keep having those years, but, you know, where things just seem to be like exponentially getting crazier.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, it can't get any crazier than 2020, or it can't get any crazier than 2021 or 2022, 2023. Like, all right, we got two wars. We have two strikes. We have, like, what else, you know?
No, exactly.
Trump's in the news again.
Yep.
Like how I don't, it's like, what, deja vu? You know, it's a lot.
Honestly, it is one of those things where I keep expecting somebody to say psych, and I don't know. I don't know when we're going to.
Yeah. Yeah, we're coming toward the end of the simulation, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But at least, I mean, like, with the strikes being over, it is exciting to get back to work.
Yeah.
And like, I won't ask you about any of your top secret projects. I know that we're all very excited for you to come back, you know, in whatever capacity you might come back in the Marvel world. But I, first of all, I have to tell you, because I am like a huge fan of your film Timer. I absolutely love it. I'm a huge fan of sci-fi, and it's a film that I watched in my 20s that I just felt so seen by, and I loved it so much. And I would first off love to ask you about your experience on that film, because I absolutely love it.
Well, I loved it too. It's one of my favorite things I've ever been lucky enough to be a part of. I love Jacqueline Schaefer. I read that script she wrote and of course directed. And, I rarely get, it seems like every year I get less and less excited about anything that comes. I don't know what that is about, but like, I also think it's part of the fact that there are just so many projects that are just not that good, honestly. And so when you do read something that's different and really cool and, you know, just excites you, it's like, oh, this is amazing. And I really, really, really wanted it. And I was lucky enough to get it. I had an actor nemesis of mine. I mean, she doesn't know she's my actor nemesis, but she's my actor nemesis. And she had initially got the part. And then she saw, it was like, oh, well, we just have like one more person or something, a couple of people left to see. And then she saw me and then I got the part. So I was like, ah, I finally got one over you. I finally got one.
Yeah. I feel like I always hear that about Hollywood, that like everybody's got that one person that they always find themselves up against in auditions.
Mm-hmm. Always.
That's gotta be an intense, especially because it's like, you know, that there's parts out there, but to find yourself consistently being compared to somebody else that's enough like you.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine, because I know that there's levels like that in other elements, but I know that with acting, it must feel personal, and in a way that it's not really personal, you know, but it must feel like.
It does feel well, you know, funny. It's not funny. It was actually really sad, but now I can laugh about it. But still, it's like, oh wow, what is this? Like, there was a part in some movie or TV show. I don't know. They literally, like in the breakdown, it said, "Looking for an Emma Caulfield type."
Oh God!
And I was like, I'm right here. I don't understand. Can I not be Emma Caulfield? What did I do to you? how are we enemies? I don't understand. Yeah, they wouldn't see me for the Emma Caulfield type. And I thought, well, that definitely tops the list of things I don't understand about the process of being an actor.
Yeah, it's weird. It's every time I hear a story like that, it's just, I mean, as someone who loves like the film industry from like a academic like viewpoint. Mm-hmm. It's always something that also I don't understand the disconnect, but I mean, I don't know. I try to relate it to like the experiences I've had. And like, anytime I think about like interviewing and things like that, and even just interviewing for regular jobs, I feel like is so also like, if you go up against an HR manager and there's just something about you, you remind them of someone or whatever, it's like the most random reasons why you might not be the person they choose. And I do think that for jobs, at least, it's easier to be like, oh, well, it's like a job that I don't really want to go to. But when it's acting and it's you're putting like yourself out there in that way, I can imagine that I don't know that I would handle it well. I really don't think that I could do it.
I mean, there are definitely moments. There's times when, I'm just not handling it well.
I mean, I think that's totally, totally valid. But what's wonderful about Timer is you got this part. Was that your first time working with Jack Schaefer?
It was. Yeah. It was the first thing she'd ever did. We really get along. She's a friend and she's just the coolest. And I just remember working with her and thinking, I probably said it as well. I was like, you're just so good. Like, this should just, like, you're going to be big. Like, there's no way you can't be big. She's like, well, yeah, let's hope, you know, something really like quippish and very Jack. Because she's also wicked funny and wicked smart. So she's just, you know, you got to like be on your toes all the time when you're talking to her, which I love. And then, you know, eventually Hollywood like recognize.
Yeah.
Which is great. And she makes everything such a joy.
Yeah. Well, what I loved about Timer, I feel like, what was the year that came out? Was it 2011? I feel like.
10, I think.
10. Okay. Yeah. I feel like it was a time when I was really into sci-fi. I was really into that kind of like subtle sci-fi that Timer is so great at, where it really is telling a very human story, but just with this added like level of tension of having this like sci-fi element that adds this like realistic component of like with Timer, the visceral sensation of like feeling like you're running out of time to accomplish things or to become the person you're supposed to be, and the way that our world puts pressure on these romantic relationships too.
Yeah.
I just felt like it was such a poignant commentary that was really, really ahead of its time. And your character also is just, she's so independent. She's so fun and smart and charming. And it really felt liberating to me to see it as a young woman and feel like, you know, this pressure that we put on ourselves, that we feel like we have to live up to this version of ourselves for society, conform it in a way, is valid because we also do feel lonely and we also want to be loved. And it didn't have any emphasis on like shame, because I feel like a lot of love stories make women out to seem like we're just desperate. We really want to be loved and that's all we want. This was a story that really allowed a woman to be seen as more than one thing, like a competent, accomplished, wonderful person who also legitimately should be allowed to want to be loved. And that doesn't have to define her as well. Like, I just thought it was so beautiful and ahead of its time.
It definitely, well, I agree, first of all. But yeah, it's ahead of its time, which is, because I feel like that technology is now. I feel like it's, if it's not, it's like around the corner. I remember doing press for that at the time. And they were like, you know, would you have a timer? Which blah, blah, blah. That was always the big question. And it seemed like such an abstract. I was like, well, that's a fun question to ask because that's never going to happen. Like, why, you know, like, sure, I think it was pretty split down the middle for most people, you know, and now it's very much like, I feel like that's knocking on our door. This AI garbage is knocking on everything that makes us human to our detriment, I believe. I feel, I hope I'm wrong, but I don't know. And now there's that other movie that just came out. fingernails or something.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. And I'm like, oh, that's Timer. Yeah. Like, that's almost the exact, that's like literally, except I think they draw blood or yeah. something. Like they prick your, you know, whatever. It's not a watch. But I was like, okay. So, you know.
No, exactly.
And I mean, it goes.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because again, Timer was so, I really do feel like it kind of almost predicted the way, because it was really, I feel like online dating was just starting to become a thing. But now we really have entered the space where it's such a common yeah. problem with dating, where people feel like, it's so accessible. There's so many options that yeah. people are just want to kick the can down the road a little bit in terms of commitment. And, you know, I feel like the commentary of Timer was like, it gave people an out to do that, to just kind of treat relationships as transactional, because they were like, oh, well, it's not gonna be the one. So it doesn't really matter. And getting to the heart of like, you know, you get what you give out of it. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a forever thing in order to, for you to treat someone like a human and have a meaningful, you know, relationship exchange, like be something to someone, even if it's not forever. And I feel like it really spoke to like this kind of like intimacy crisis that we find ourselves in now, and kind of predicted it in a really clever way.
In a clever way. Yeah. You know, I do have railed against this idea that, you know, the women in any story have to be like their great pursuit in life is just to find the person and be in that relationship. And that is the sole defining accomplishment, right? That's it. That's like our and if we're not, if it's the movie's not about that, the sub role, the side piece, you know, she's not very developed. Not all the time. Obviously, there's been amazing, amazing movies and TV shows and roles for women. But I also completely reject the notion that love is irrelevant, or you don't need love, or, you know, like this immediate call to be like, you know, if there's a character in something and she's like, I want to find this person, you know, I want to be in love. I want to get married, or I want to have a kid. It's like, I don't know, completely antithetical to this modern, you're supposed to be this version of a woman. And I rail against that too. Cause I'm like, there is no one version of that. Like, and what is a whole life without, for me, what is it? Without love. And I don't just necessarily mean a partner, you know, like a life partner or whatever, but the idea that it's just sort of inconvenient.
Yeah.
You know, like why have emotions at all? We'll just, you know, communicate via text, or we'll just not see each other that much, or, you know, whatever. There's no real, I don't know, genuine stakes in any relationship from some people's viewpoint, at least sort of, I feel like I don't know how widespread the belief is, but it's certainly a loud voice.
Yeah.
You know, on the socials, it's like, you know, you don't need that. It's like, I don't know. Don't we all need it though? I mean, I don't just mean from a woman's perspective. I mean, from anyone's perspective, like, it seems almost, I think it's paramount as well for our survival. Like we need the groups, we need the connections, we need the friends, we need the love, like love all around. I mean, it sounds very Love Actually.
Well, you know, no, but I mean,
that's like, what is that? I think that's why that movie's so loved still, like 20, however many years later,
yeah,
or whatever. I mean, it's just about people seeking love. That's all it is.
I mean, I think
it's a great pursuit.
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely so true. It's something that I think about all the time in the way that like women's stories appear in media, because I feel like there's been like this overcorrection where a lot of times it's like, if a story is about, has any kind of romance in it, it's automatically like, oh, well, we're not going to do that anymore. That's frivolous. That's like, oh, you know, we don't need to worry about that. And it's like, as a grown woman, when I was a teenager, like I always cared about relationships more than just romantic relationships, but I also did care about romantic relationships. And I feel like it makes me kind of resentful of this idea that, you know, in order to be like a powerful woman, you have to essentially be this idealized version of a man. You have to be cold, calculated, stoic, you know, it's not, you not emotional, and you're not worried about the trivial pursuits of like finding love. I think that it's just it's a balance. And I feel like for a long time we started overcorrecting because it is true that for a long time, a lot of the roles that were offered to women were like just the love interest or whatever. And we want to move on from that, but also like to paint any version of intimacy as like unimportant and trivial and silly and girlish, I feel like also is doing us all a disservice, men and women.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah.
But, word. Yeah, right. but that's amazing. I love that. I love that you got that part. I love that you like put everything into it, because you are someone who is so beloved on the internet for the many different roles that you've had. And I know that part of that is, you know, playing a role in the different like beloved franchises that you've been a part of. You're obviously a part of like WandaVision, and that's very exciting. And that role is exciting. Also, you know, being an incredibly beloved character to myself and many people, Anya on Buffy, which again is like, was a subversive kind of reality for female characters, especially for the time. Which was very, very cool. And I mean, like, it's, I think it's really fascinating that, you know, we can see women in the film industry parallel these different kind of idealized versions of women, but it's so wonderful when they get a chance to be real. And I feel like you've always brought this kind of raw authenticity to your roles, which is very freeing as a viewer to see. I mean, I constantly think of like one of the most powerful scenes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer is, in my opinion, the episode where Joyce dies. And you give honestly one of the greatest performances of the entire series. I feel like people talk about it so constantly because of how vulnerable you were. And it really was so unbelievably moving and real.
Was there a question in there? I'm just soaking up the love. Really. I was like, oh, that's so nice. Oh my God.
Oh. I mean, I do.
I was good in that.
You were. God. You were so good. I mean, I know that
I phoned it in. No. no, but I thank you. That's very, very, that's very kind of you. I don't know. I feel like my, you know, whatever the body of work that I've done is limited, actually. I don't feel like there's a very wide range. I'm not saying I'm the same person. I don't mean that, but I mean like it falls into this, at least a genre, if nothing else, which the genre in and of itself will have a certain tone. I have been attracted to like the character actor roles, the scrappy, the drug addict, the stripper, the union organizer, someone who's like, I don't know, not the ingenue, not the bitchy boss, not the, you know, whatever it is, the things that I guess is, you know, somewhat pretty face is what they stick you in. Yeah. You know? That's just not for me. It's just, I get really bored with that. I have been very bored with that.
I mean, that's completely understandable. I think that it's something that I want more of all the time is like female characters that are brave enough to be unlikable. And I think it's something that we struggle with as a society overall, because I do think that like there is this like base instinct to reject. Like I think about like the Skyler White effect, for example. And
wait, hold on a second. If I could just say this for a moment, Skyler White bugged. Okay. Just gonna go on. She bugged. It was not like, I don't agree with the bro boys like trolling her. Like the, you know, like, oh, you're just messing up. You know, you're in Walter White's way. Like bad. Boo you. Boo you, woman. Like that stuff. No, like that was gross. Yeah. You know, I know. Yeah. She, you know, that's like completely ugly bro culture, you know, no, but like She also did Buck.
But that's what I mean, though, is that, like,
you know,
she was a character that was not intended to be likable. And, like, I think that she really embodied this kind of character that we really don't get to see a lot, that is really, it's a woman that by all accounts should be likable in theory, but, you know, we're meant to root for the show's protagonist, who's Walter, even though he is, you know, objectively a terrifying like kind of evil man. Yeah. So it's like, it makes sense that, you know, we view her as antagonistic, but like Anna Gunn, like that, she nailed that performance because she was able to make her, you know, the scenes where you're like, well, I don't like what you're doing here. I don't like the way you're handling it. And it's this character that is allowed to be so, so rich and interesting. And I think that it's really fascinating that, like, that provokes such a strong negative response in a lot of viewers, because she is a character that is, you know, very complex and very, very on the surface unlikable. And it kind of forces the viewer to reconcile their own feelings and motivations while watching the show. I think that it's really brilliant writing, because it does, when you really look at it, you're like, well, why don't I like her? And that is a really, like, sitting in that space is really uncomfortable, realizing, like, why you're feeling the way you're feeling. But it always makes me a little bit sad, because I think that, like, you know, a character like Skylar White is just as, like, layered and has a lot of interesting, like, performance to give in the same capacity as, like, a you know, Walter White. But they're received so differently that I feel like there's this idea that you can't center stories around characters like that, because audiences will reject them. And there are exceptions, and I think that there are a lot of, like, really interesting, you know, characters. But I think it's like the Lady Macbeth effect, you know, where if you have a character like that, they do kind of tend to be, like, on the sidelines a little bit. It's very rare, I feel like, where you get a character like that, where the story's not called Lady Macbeth, you know? I think that she's the most interesting character in the story, but at the end of the day, you know, we're following her husband around, which is something that I run into a lot, because I feel like, as a viewer, there are projects that I go to that I'm like, wow, this is incredible. I love this. I relate to this. But I do often find myself, like, orbiting around these fringe characters that they get to exist in these kind of nebulous side spaces. And I always want more from them.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. But I'll say, I love it. We're just going to go on a Breaking Bad.
Brad, I mean, do, I would love
but
it.
I, if I had to critique, and I don't think that this came from some sort of, like, oh, we're going to be a bunch of misogynists and just give these women shitty roles because we hate women. I think, you know, like, bleh. I don't, that's not where I'm coming from. But the really interesting characters to watch were all the male roles.
Yeah.
It was interesting to see Hank's relationship and Hank be such the, you know, the by the book law guy, to see that friendship unravel, to have him realize, like, oh God, you've been this dude I've been chasing, like, heart, like, horrible.
Yeah.
Jesse's evolution, Jesse's girlfriend, who I quite like, Kristen Ritter, as an actress.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you don't want her around Jesse. Jesse's not great either. But you're like, well, you're an interesting character and you're a good actress and everything, but, like, you need to die. Like, yeah. You need to go away. You need to get into recovery. I don't know what you need to do. Like, you need to, if you're going to go down, you can't take Jesse Pinkman down with you. You've got to, you know, you've got to go, which is oddly what Walter White decided in that moment. Like, I'm going to let you die here.
Yeah.
Because for so many layered reasons, you know, which makes him a monster and also weirdly like a really messed up father figure for Jesse. Like, you're taking him down too. So, you know, like that weird Svengalian judgment call, like, yeah, oh my God, I can't believe I'm talking so much about Breaking Bad, but I love the show so much.
Breaking Bad's
amazing.
Like,
but, like, she's a character that you're like, we need to get rid of her.
Yeah.
that, oh my God, the actress's name, the other wife. That's all I can think of her right now.
Hank's wife?
Hank's wife.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. She's a confidant, I guess, you know, whatever, but she's not really invested either. It's sort of like, as the female characters go, obviously, you know, Anna Gunn's character is by far the most entrenched and as such going to be the most vilified because it's like you really are the fly in the ointment right now.
Yeah.
And we are rooting for this anti-hero to succeed even though he's garbage.
Yeah.
So she's going to get the blowback. But what I think, if I'm going to add, okay, maybe there is something. Maybe there could have been. Please don't redo it. I'm just going to say this again. Like, please no one come for me. But, like, what I'm saying is, like, it could have been really interesting if even, I don't know, if any of those other characters had been, you know, female. Like, if Hank – well, I don't know that would have worked either. Or even if Jessie was the girl. Anyway, I should go back to college and do a course on Breaking Bad.
It sounds like you could teach one. Like, literally, I agree with everything you're saying. And I do think it's really interesting that, like, Hank's wife, Marie,
thank you.
Yeah, I had to look it up. But you're right. Like, the way these women are portrayed as, and everyone in the show to an extent is unlikable. They're all very, very flawed characters who interact in very flawed ways. But it is interesting to me that, again, I'm a huge fan of Breaking Bad, just like you. It's not a show that I like want to critique because I do think that it was written for a certain purpose. I think that, like, this idea of creating this male character that is meant to appeal to these base desires that men are felt are necessary in order for manhood, but showing the dark side of those. And I think you're right. I think the fact that the way that Hank and Walter and Jesse all interact is very indicative and reflective of, like, the way that men interact with each other. But it is kind of a bummer that, like, all of the women in the story kind of inhabit this, like, bitchy wife trope, kind of, where it's like, you know, they're just getting in the way. Like, Marie, you know, when she has her issues with, like, the stealing and whatever, it's like, it's presented as, like, so petty compared to, like, the real problems that the men have. And I do think that that's to an extent intentional. And I think that the same thing goes for Jesse and I'm blanking on Kristen Ritter's character's name as well. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think that all of these women are kind of presented as, like, just detracting from what the men's, like, goals are. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Jesse, it's like, obviously he's being pulled in multiple directions from very negative forces all around. He's just looking for love. But it is, yeah, it's one of those things where I would like to see media that, you know, allows these women to be a little bit less stereotypical, even in the ways that they're presented as being flawed contributors to a story about bad things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I see that. I totally see that. It's not the fault of any of the actresses, because they all were doing the most with what they had.
Yeah.
And again, it's not a critique of the show. I don't want the show redone so that they can change all the women characters again. Because again, it's not about them. It was never about them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, it's like, we're going to give you a lot to do. But again, your main goal is to thwart our hero, our anti-hero. So there's only so much you can do with that.
Yeah.
You know? And if it was reversed, if it was, you know, I'm trying to think of a show that even kind of came close to there being like an anti-hero. I never watched it though, but I heard Weeds kind of had a woman gone rogue.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit. I don't know. I never heard much like discussion around it. So I don't suspect that it triggered the zeitgeist fury or the intense online curiosity. Like let's dissect this. But If it was reversed, if the roles were reversed, I would suspect that the male characters would be just as annoying. They would be like, hey, we're rooting for her and you are causing problems. And it's like, why are we rooting for this horrible person?
But it's interesting you bring up Weeds because I actually have seen Weeds. I really enjoyed it. And you're right. I don't think it really was nearly as talked about. But it is interesting because the lead character, Nancy, is very flawed and in a similar vein to Walter White. You know, she kind of like takes this path. Not quite. She doesn't quite go as evil. She doesn't quite get to the point where it's like, oh, yikes. But it is interesting because she's surrounded by a cast of like male characters and she is usually presented as the one that's like causing all of her own problems in her own life. And they're kind of like the picking up the pieces, which is, it's interesting how still it reflects these, even when she's the protagonist, you know. And I, like I said, I think we're both on the same page about the fact that like Breaking Bad, awesome. I love these stories. And I do think that there can be stories that are male centric or and even are like, you know, even when they're not like, I think Breaking Bad is very intentionally critical of like this certain type of male archetype that we have revered in society. I think it's like a subversion of that, which I think is really clever. But even when stories are not meant to be, you know, even when it's just men doing cool shit, it's like, it's not like I fault them for that. I feel like there's this like kind of a vacuum where I would love to see women that have roles that are that meaty, you know?
Yeah. I would say The Leftovers is a really good, I love The Leftovers too. I put that in my top five. Like across the board.
Yeah.
Carrie Coon. I don't even, masterclass amazing. You know, that was, that actually she had the role we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, she is that role. That was the complicated, I don't even know. She's, you know, she does unlikable things. Not that that's the criteria. Like, okay, she's going to be an interesting woman only if she's unlikable now. Like, come on.
Yeah.
You can be interesting and still not be an asshole. Yeah. You know, is that where we've gone now? Is that it? No, I don't mean that, but I'm like, she's this wounded person who has to pick up her life, who wished her kids were gone in a hot second, like, and they're actually gone and has to live with this, like her heart is outside of herself now.
Yeah.
And you know, her, just that whole thing. I that whole bit, but all of them, the Amy Brennan character.
Yeah.
Amazingly complex. The Liv Tyler character, just so dope. The horrible lead woman who's great actress and I can't think of her name right now, who
is
won
it
the Emmy.
Ann Dowd. She's
Ann
so
Dowd.
Good in that show.
I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You are so good. Yeah. You know? So that's a show I think hit it out of the park for male and female. Neither one compromised for the other. And so it's like, well, you can do it. They did it beautifully.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's a show too where I feel like gender is explored really interestingly because the show is so existential and so catastrophic and like emotionally desolate that I feel like there are explorations of gender, like the guilt that like a mother feels for momentarily, you know, feeling that you want freedom from your children and then, you know, feeling like you have to live with that for the rest of your life. But it also, it's this almost post-apocalyptic world where the rules are different. And so everybody kind of gets a chance to kind of shed these preconceived notions of gender and exist in a way that is felt very freeing from a, you know, audience perspective. I was like, wow, this is really interesting.
Completely agree. Yeah. You know, the first couple episodes were really, really bleak. And I was like, I don't know if I could do, I mean, I'm so into it, but like, oh, this is heavy, man. I don't know if that I want to be in my own existential crisis now watching a television show with my free time.
Yeah.
That's why like, I mean, I can't go see like The Road or something like
that.
Oh
my God. Yeah. Know?
Like I tried, I'm like, dude, I'm done. This feels too real, honestly. And I don't need it.
Yeah.
Like, good luck. Someone's like, do you want to know how it ends? And I was like, okay, you know, whatever. And I was like, I'm so glad I didn't sit through that. No offense to anybody in it, because they're all great. But
oh, yeah. That's how I felt when I watched The Mist. I was just so mad.
So good, though.
It is so good. But at the end, I was just like so furious. Good. I was like, what? Oh, what is God. This? I was so mad. Oh, I just, yeah. I don't think a movie's it's ever so made me so mad.
It's so messed up. And so real. Like,
yeah.
They end up being okay, but not those guys.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
and it is.
And like the random choice, like if they had gone out with her.
Yeah.
If they had gone out and helped her get home. Like the random choices, like, well, it seems like that's really a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because chances are we're all going to get eaten right now if we go. But then she ends up being okay.
Yeah.
You know, the randomness of that. And can we just, Marcia Gay Harden, I cannot.
Oh, yeah.
How that bitch did not end up with an Oscar.
Literally.
I still don't get, I'm like, that is, I mean, she does have one, thank God. But like, oh, she, that, because you know, you meet those people. I've seen them.
Yeah.
They're around. And you just know, in that small, you know, you get stuck with one of those fools who ends up being more dangerous than the creatures outside.
Exactly.
You know? So good.
No, I what I love about that movie is it's cruel in a way that reflects our own world, which I think is why it elicits such a strong response, because what we see in the movies a lot of times is the fantasy, you know, we followed the one family, the War of the Worlds effect, you know, we followed the one family that they all made it through at the end and things are bad, but you know, hey, it's a happy ending. And The Mist, I feel like, is just, it's that chaotic, random cruelty of life and circumstance that leaves you so frustrated, but it's an honest reflection of what most people experience when they experience something like that. Because most people don't get their happy ending, you know? They say something like that. Like, you know, when an alien mist comes to town and you get like a rift in the time-space continuum, those events.
But it's even more brutal because he is alive.
Yeah.
Like that's, I think, honestly, what's so like the most messed up out of that bit is that he just doesn't have an extra bullet.
Yeah.
Like, you know, It's so bad. It's like so bad that I'm surprised it ever got released in the U.S.
Yeah,
I feel like that would hit fine in Europe or someplace. Yeah. But here in America, they're like, no, dude. Test audiences, something would be like, you, that can't happen.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, no, I love Frank Darabont.
Yeah,
I love Frank Darabont. Shawshank Redemption, The Mist, Walking Dead for the first couple of seasons, and then we won't talk about it.
Yeah, that's the best. That's the best course of action with The Walking Dead. It is so interesting. I do love. You're right. I am surprised that honestly it got past like American test audience screenings, because I can't imagine that it went over well on the studio side. But I mean, people do love the movie, at least now.
I love it. I'll watch it again and again. Knowing exactly how it ends, I'm like, yeah, bring it.
Well, okay, so you have incredible taste. I would love to know about the movies. I mean, I've already in this conversation, I'm like, yep, check. Awesome. So like what were the movies or media that like really like you feel like defined you, made you want to get into the industry? Like I'm always so curious what those inspirations are.
I don't know if they made me want to get into the industry as much as they just, the medium had such an impact on me that I think it's natural that I ended up here. Do you know
that
what
makes
I mean?
Sense. Yeah. Yeah.
But my initial course, I mean, yeah, I was like, I'll be an actress. I'm fucking amazing at it. But I was all set to get my psychology degree. Like that's what I wanted to do. There's a piece of me that has always been fascinated by the behavior of other people, even people I can't stand. I'm just like, why are you like that? Why? What motivates you to do that?
That actually does seem like a really linear transition now that I think about it.
It's like, you know,
yeah.
I got interrupted on that path, quite literally. Like, you want to be an actress? I'm like, okay. You know? I'll try it.
But I mean, it's another way to like crawl inside somebody else's head.
This head. But weirdly, I think the not even weirdly, the going, I'm still very much in love. It is way too late now because I would have to do, I don't know, like 20 years of school or something at this point to be able to like actually be able to sit in an office. But I've always been very, very in love with the idea of an office where people come in and they sit down in front of you and you try to figure them out. It's like, it's a puzzle. It's a game. It's all the things that I get off on. Anyway, that's a different story for a different time. But I think that these films or TV shows, performances, whatever, informed my, whether it was going to inevitably be the path of being so intrigued by human behavior, or I would have gone off and done something different had I not been exposed to these things. So we'll just say that they informed me and this is the path, right? So Alien.
Oh, Alien's so good.
Alien and Aliens, both those movies for different reasons, because they're both completely different. Aliens is my all-time favorite movie, all time. the character of Ripley, period. Like Ripley, period, the end. There's a third one. I don't think I like where this is going. So for me, it just stops at Aliens and Alien. That's where we sign off with Sigourney and Newt and Hot Hicks. Like that's where that's where we're at, you know? And interesting talking about the giving the woman the love interest vibe. It never really did do that. It was more like fan appreciation on his end. Like, oh, and clearly he's hot. So she was like, yeah, I'll probably hook up with you and, you know, whatever. And they do kind of set the template for, oh, you have a child, you know, there's an orphan and hot dude and grieving mom who lost her child and they'll all live happily ever after at some point with a lot of therapy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they didn't spell it out for you, but it's pretty obvious that that's what it's going to be. But it didn't negate her being the badass. And every single turn she was quite literally badass, but not badass like now we just expect all women to know how to do a roundhouse kick and knock you out. Or, oh, I've taken boxing classes so I'm going to beat you up, which is also awesome. Like, do that. But she was just this scientist really who was able to outsmart an enemy that just destroyed everything, you know? And I love that. And also tap into the nurturer who could take care of this child. Obviously the director's cut shows that she lost a child, which when I saw the director's cut, I was like, oh, that makes a lot more sense. It's odd that you took that piece out. But you know, it didn't ultimately need it. Like you could buy the bond there.
Yeah.
You bought it. Especially as like a rebirth for her too, because she lost. So, you know, the whole thing again, I could go on and on about Aliens and how awesome that movie is, but her performance, that female, but again, Cameron loves to do that. I mean, Terminator.
Yeah.
Terminator Part 2, both those.
Judgment Day is so good.
God damn.
Yeah.
Like, oh, these are both such smart, interesting movies that the survival of this relies on her.
Yeah.
And they don't, there's nothing's ever compromised for it.
Yeah.
You know, they're still very much women.
Yeah.
They're not women doing man things. They're just women doing women things and being allowed to do them.
Exactly.
Without having to explain themselves. Well, do you know?
It's like, so fascinating that you bring this up because, I mean, you must know that Ripley was originally written as a male character. Mm-hmm. And I love that you love Aliens more than Alien. I do personally. I'm a horror girly, so I love Alien, but I love Aliens too. And what I love about it, it's a example that I bring up so frequently because I do think that what Ridley Scott and Sigourney Weaver were able to accomplish with the first Alien in making this shift and saying, you know, we don't need to change the role really, but Sigourney like brought this energy to it. And I think also the fact that, you know, the original mm-hmm. script and Ridley Scott's like vision for the movie is very much like obviously all of the, you know, aesthetic choices to highlight mm-hmm. gender and, you know, genitals mm-hmm. and that kind of thing was very interesting. But then James Cameron came in and he really did kind of allow the character of Ripley to have these kind of specifically feminine motivations and character traits that when you build on this foundation of a character that's a woman that was essentially written as a man, you allow for so much autonomy, and it's an opportunity that a lot of women don't get. But then for James Cameron to come in and say, but she can also have this element of femininity to her. She doesn't have to just be this, you know, idealized woman written as a man.
Oh, I have something.
Go.
I think so. You're right. 100%. But also ironic because she was far, what I would say, quote, prettier.
Yeah.
Right. In the first one, she was definitely in full scientist mode.
Yep.
She wasn't set out to be pretty. What I'm saying, she's a naturally beautiful woman.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is she was very much, she hadn't gone through the combat. She hadn't gone through anything. So she was just this, you know, they literally do call her Snow White in the, you know.
Oh, yeah.
In the second one, you know, who's Snow White over there, you know, very with the pale skin and the hair and, you know, looking fabulous Sigourney, but not like fabulous Sigourney with, you know, everything zipped down kind of low and her boobs out, you know, like just, she's just a pretty, yeah. Empirically speaking, you're an attractive human being. And there you are saving everybody. And yeah. That's dope. And then in the second one, she's more militarized, right? She's in the fatigues. She's in the, you know, she's worn
yeah.
more. She's weary. She's had, you know, she's sleep deprived. She's traumatized quite literally. I mean, she's been through it. But, you know, but here she is. But again, not calling to anything. Like they're all in their underwear getting out of stasis. It's yeah. all whatever. It's a subtle reference done by Vasquez. Like, oh, look, you know, she's muy bonita, you know, whatever. and you know, and then some of the greatest ridiculous one-liners coming after that. I mean, I can quote the whole movie, honestly. It's embarrassing.
No, like, this is impressive.
it's like he does give her this added backstory of, oh, you had a child. You didn't expect to miss her birthday. You're not only again, nothing wrong with being only anything.
Yeah.
But in terms of giving layers and layers, you're a scientist out there. You have a girl, you know, you love your kid. You're going to go, you know, you're going to be back home. You don't. Everyone thinks you're dead. She died. Her kid dies at 80 something years old, you know, and she's back at it again. You know, she goes back. She makes the decision to go. I have to face this grief. I have to face my fear. I've got to face all of it with really nothing. She doesn't go through training. She doesn't do anything. She, again, is just her fucking desire to do it and her wits about her because she's the smartest person in the room, was back then, still is. Like nothing's changed. She got all the extra elements without sequelizing bigger, louder, brasher.
Yeah.
Highlighted hair. You know, you're still flawless, but you've also lost a kid, you know, like yes. glammed out. Like we're gonna focus on how beautiful you are. But also, yeah, there's all this other shit. So maybe we'll give you a little dirt on your face and call that a day
yeah.
for you. You know. So yeah, it was this really interesting dichotomy, I think, that Cameron did give her these extra layers, the nurturing, the thing, without diving into any of them. Like she never lost who she was ever throughout the film whatsoever. Still got recognized by the hottest dude on the ship. It's like, oh, she's badass. Not threatened by her at all.
Yeah.
Again, showing a very cool image of what I think a true man is.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm fucking military. I mean, I am ultimately, I am a Marine. I am badass.
and I am not threatened by this badass woman.
Yeah.
Right here, who can clearly take care of herself. In fact, I'm so turned on by her. I can't, I hope we live so we can have, we can make babies, yeah. You know, like, like it, she's just to me, like, she's just, it's an admirable, perfect character.
Yeah.
I went off on an aliens. This is, I get so passionate about aliens. I should teach a class.
You should. Honestly. I mean, you mentioned other examples, and I'm like, honestly, James Cameron. Like, I think back. I think to the Sarah
Abyss.
Connor.
There.
Oh my God, I love The Abyss the so Abyss. Much. And I think
another one.
It is. He has, to his credit, he has a really solid history of creating these female characters. Like he did it with Terminator oh God, 1 Rose. And Terminator 2. Yeah. Also,
Rose and Titanic.
Also very, very feminine, but very strong in her own way. And in The yeah. Abyss, I love that it was this like tumultuous love story. But again, it was between equals, which I've always found mm-hmm. like so beautiful. And yeah. Sarah Connor is another yeah. incredible example where she's so maternal. She's definitely, she has so many hallmarks of, you know, traditional femininity. But then in Terminator mm-hmm. 2, she comes back and he's like, yeah, Linda Hamilton, if you want to get absolutely shredded, please do. Like, she looks like a beast, and she's still stunning, but it's like...
No, she's hot as hell.
She's so hot.
I found that so inspiring. I'm like, damn, I need to... Can I lift my weight up on a bar?
I know. Like, I want to get buff all of a sudden.
She did all this in a cell. Like, what?
No, exactly. Damn, girl. It's really... Yeah. It's so liberating to get to see those kinds of characters that are like... Yeah, they're strong and fierce and not to be fucked with, but they're also like really loving mothers normal. And just, yeah, just people.
They're just normal people.
Yeah.
Right. They're not assassins who've been trained.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, they're just people.
Exactly.
Just, you know, Rose is a socialite who seemingly can't do anything, but has a fiery spirit and she busts out, which for that, seriously, like you want to talk about female strength, I'm going to have another conversation about Rose.
Yes.
Do it. Bukater. Dawson. Right? She literally is a prison of a system and a time.
Yeah.
And she busts out of that on a ship with nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Right? She's like, bye.
Exactly.
I'm going to just try to do this on my own.
Yes.
And she still did it without Jack.
Yeah.
She's like, she had an opportunity. She's like, I could go back to that life right now. All I have to do is show my face. And she's like, nope, I am not going back to that. I am not going to be a prisoner.
Yeah.
And be this version of myself to fit this version of womanhood and me. And she's like, nope, thanks. I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm... lived her best life and then died at the end and met Jack at the tower. Yeah,
she,
come on.
Exactly. No, I love like, those kinds of it. Feminine
it's
strength.
So good.
Because we can be Ripley it's or so we can good. Be Rose or we can be a combination of the two. And I do love that. Mm-hmm. I think that, and it's really cool watching Titanic again and realizing that like Rose is kind of the hero of the whole movie. Like she has all the power in that relationship. She doesn't have the power in her mm-hmm. life, but her relationship with Jack, you know, she has a lot of social power. Mm-hmm. She's the one that goes mm-hmm. back. She doesn't get on the boat. She can get saved. She goes to save Jack. You know, it's like, it's ironic. I feel like that so much of the conversation is like, oh, she could have saved him on the door. But it's like, she saved him so many times in that movie before then.
And again, I'm going to point this out. They tried to get on the door.
Yes.
It's almost like nobody remembers that.
Yeah.
She tries to lift up. The thing flips over.
Yep.
And she barely is able to stay on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. Again, they made that choice specifically because he had to die, which is so sad.
That's the other thing, too, is like it's metaphorical. It's like it's mm-hmm. she found her – he helped her find herself. And
literally,
she,
he opened the fucking door for
exactly.
her.
Exactly.
There's a floating door at the end of the movie. It was never about Jack Dawson.
It's a metaphor.
Get it together. He is a metaphor. He's a beautiful example
yes.
of a man – again, not threatened by her wealth,
yep.
by her power, by her charm, by her charisma, by anything. He's not threatened by her.
Yeah.
And again, perfect example of a man. Like, I'm a man. I'm a dude. Here I am. I'm spitting over the side of a spit. Whatever you want to say it, right? Whatever categories you want to put him in. He's an artist. He's not – he appreciates the feminine body, but he's not a creep. He's just like, I respect you. Like, are we doing this? It was like, exactly. He's literally like modeling consent before consent even became a thing.
Exactly.
It's like, dude, I have to teach a class about how James Cameron is the ultimate feminist.
You honestly, can I take it? Because literally,
because of, like, James Cameron has done more to propel the female cause in cinema than I think any other director ever has. I mean, and I would put women in that category.
I do think that he has a really proven, like, track record with his female characters that is legitimately very impressive. And also, just like we've talked about, the range, you know, it's not even like he just writes the same character over and over again. It's really incredible. The Abyss is probably my favorite Cameron movie. And I love it so much.
I love The Abyss so much.
But I mean,
Again, director's cut is very much needed. I feel
so
for
much
that
better.
Movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it really does explain.
Well, and also,
like, so much.
Maybe his most personal movie, because he's spoken about how, you know, the story was based on his own divorce. And it is really interesting the way that he, even, you know, post divorce, writes that relationship and that character in such a loving and, I think, generous way. Listen, I could talk about James Cameron with you and Breaking Bad with you all freaking day. And when you start up that class, that master class, that university course, let me know. I'll be the first person to sign up. But this is,
I don't think anybody would pay to hear me to sell a class why James Cameron is the modern feminist.
Well, this has honestly been incredible.
Have you listened to Slayers?
I have listened to Slayers. And let me tell you, as an original Buffy fan, it's so incredible to get to see Anya do so much with Slayers. Was that amazing to get to kind of embody these different versions of the character?
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea what she was going to do at all. You know, she just said, you'll have, she said, I intend to right some wrongs.
Yeah, Amber, you know? Amber, this is Amber Benson?
Amber, yeah. Yeah, Amber Benson. And then she very much did. Doing the three of the three Anyas together at once, you know, like not breaking from character to character, but just like continuing it as one just massive chunk of dialogue, but changing voices and characters within them. You know, I mean, that was, I don't know how I did it, but I loved it. I seriously like just was like reborn in a weird way doing that. It's one of the most fun I've had, like, doing anything. And I was like, I really, but again, that sort of tapped into my desire to, like, do something different than I think someone would expect me to do. Like, I even surprised myself. I was like, wait, I'm a dog now. How am I a human dog? I don't know how I did that. And then switch right back into a normal voice. And then, you know, the acrobatics that took. Yeah. And it was just really rewarding. I'm like, does anybody need me to read a book?
Was it your first time voice acting? Because I would imagine that does.
No.
Oh, really? I mean, so.
But I hadn't done it. I did a little bit for web series, then YouTube thing called Fantasy Hospital, but it was a long time ago. And I'd done a couple of things for Robot Chicken, but it'd been forever, but not really. It's not something I thought it would be really fun to go do voiceover, but it never really came my way.
Yeah.
So that introduction to that is now I've become quite obsessed with the idea of being back in it, really, to do anything, you know, pull voices out or read.
Well, to have that freedom.
Be a freedom. It's so
to kind of like morph the character as you go, because you don't have the limitations of the visual element. You can just, that must be so cool.
It was liberating.
And you guys recorded like together, right? You did that's so.
Yeah, all in the same room. Yeah.
Because, I know that that's become like a little bit more popular with voice acting now. And I feel like you can really tell. Because you guys have this chemistry. You guys jumped right back into it. And it really, you can feel, like, you can feel the tension between the characters. You can feel this real sense of space, which I think is, you can only get when you're recording together.
Totally.
Yeah, that's...
Totally. The only one who wasn't with us was Tony. But he,
I mean, we have a huge screen of his face, and he was live with us in his booth in England.
Oh, that's amazing.
But he was essentially like in the space with us, so he was live.
And Amber was directing too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's quite the little powerhouse. It was great. I look forward to another season should it be greenlit. I mean, everyone's on board, but it's not up to Amber. It's not up to us.
I mean,
it's not even up to Audible, really.
I hope
Disney. So we'll see.
Oh yeah, that is
like that.
Yeah. But I hope we do, because honestly, it really did feel like a way to get to connect with those characters that I feel like a lot of people did feel were a little bit done a disservice to, I feel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like it really, as much as that show and those characters mean to everyone, we can all look back with, you know, with the clarity of, you know, hindsight. Yeah. And while I think that what that show and what amazing writers like Mari Noxon did, you know, I do think that it's great to get to see these characters on their own terms. And it's great to get to see like creatives like Amber jump in and get to see, you know, creatives like yourself be able to take these roles on and make them something that really feels transformative, you know?
Yeah. Yes, totally. I completely agree with you. And, you know, there's something that just sits sour with fans and with, you know, cast when, I mean, characters die, things happen. I asked to be killed. So it's not like I was like, well, you killed me, you know. When there's a personal reason for, you know, when you tweak the decision or you make the exit, personal.
Yeah.
You know, when you make it about something else, you know, that's when it's that's the disservice to a character, to, you know, like, well, you didn't have to do that. You didn't have to do it that way, but you chose to do it that way, which, you know, That's showing your belief. Well, whatever. I don't need to waste my breath, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So it's like, so it's not, it's nice to have it. It's not erased. It's just kind of reset in that way.
Yeah.
So if I were to ever die again in that universe, you know, I know that I would, I know that my death would at least be acknowledged.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
It wouldn't be like, bye, bitch.
No, exactly.
Like, ow.
And I mean, as somebody who like,
why are you so mean?
No, exactly. And as somebody who like was obsessed with the series when I was younger, to the point where I even read some of the comics like that continued the story, and I quickly stopped reading the comics because I do feel like that when it became clearer when less people were involved, when there were, you know, less. Mm. Actors to embody these roles and make them their own, and less writers on board, that the story was maybe not, at least in
I
that
feel
form.
You don't even you don't even have to say it, girl. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I will say is I'm so glad that we have this version, this offshoot now, that feels fresh and amazing, and to get to see creatives like Amber take such a leadership role is like really, really exciting and cool for fans like myself.
Well, I know she appreciates that.
Well, you are fantastic.
She's the best.
I love Amber. I love you. And honestly, I've this conversation has been so much fun. You have excellent taste, and I'm so glad that you brought up Ripley, because that honestly was, and the whole James Cameron thing was just so much fun. But thank you so much for taking the time because this really, I feel like getting this kind of insight is so valuable. And I think that, you know, we're all just people at the end of the day. It's not, you know, women, men, whatever. I don't want there to be this divide, but it is, you know, when you talk to women who exist in these like predominantly, you know, male centric industries, there is just a lot of times like stuff that's kind of just like left left on the table or left on the cutting room floor. And it's nice to get that firsthand perspective because I think that it's important, you know?
Yeah, I agree. You're awesome.
You're awesome. Thank you so much, Emma.
Thank you.
And yeah, we'll see you next week.